Rinpoche had agreed to teach here April 24th, which is a Sunday, but if His Holiness is teaching at Columbia this thing, I don't know if he is.
Yeah.
Is that the date?
No, it's not there.
It's Thursday and Friday.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Is Dalai
Lama coming? Yeah, Rinpoche can't teach when the Dalai Lama is, when his teacher is teaching in that city, he can't
teach.
Not. That's fine.
It's a conference.
But I mean, even then, he wouldn't be allowed. He wouldn't want to do it. So, is that sure? His Holiness is Thursday and Friday? Mm-hmm. Anybody know for sure?
I just know from memory, but I have it at home.
Okay.
I have it written down. It was the 26th or the 27th.
Yeah.
That's what snow lines.
So that's the day after.
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay. Well, if it doesn't conflict, he'll feel comfortable doing it.
What will he do?
He'll do the text, the thousand angels text that you're... So that's why I didn't go through it, because he's going to go through it. And that's what you base your daily practice on.
When is that?
Sunday the 24th of April here. Unless we might take a bigger space. We have some spaces we're looking at.
What time?
He was great. You know, normally he would only teach like an hour in the afternoon. And he said he'll teach all day. He'll do a session at 10 and he'll do a session at 2. And you guys get first an hour in the afternoon. And he said he'll teach all day. He'll do a session at 10 and he'll do a session at 2. And you guys get in first, and then we might have to close it if there's not space.
You said that's what you do for your daily practice?
Yeah, it's the thing, it's a very short thing you recite just before you do your practice. It's at the back of your notebook. It's basically a 7 ingredients practice.
Which, if you're already doing another practice, which incorporates that, then don't worry about it.
Yeah, like the 6th session has it in it. But it's not, in the monastery we always do it anyway, before the 6th session. It's good if you can do it. Okay, I think that's it. Is that all enough, then?
Yes.
So, what is sem and gu?
Sem means mind. Ne means state. Gu means mind. I'm sorry. Sem means mind, right? Ne means state. Gu means mind. Ne means state. Gu means mind. I'm sorry. Sem means mind, right? Name in state, gu means number 9. This is the first one, and I'll read you what he says. How do you get to this? It's by studying with your teacher what to meditate on. So how do you even get to the first state? It comes by hearing what you should be meditating on. Getting your object from your teacher, from your lama.
The object of meditation?
Yeah. He teaches you some object that you should be meditating on. We're going to meditate on something called Yundin Shigyama, and that will be the next few classes.
Okay. I'm sorry, is listening to your lama and what?
Learning from your lama what to meditate on. We haven't reached that yet. What object to take for your meditation. That's what gets you to the first state. And the first state's name is... it's difficult. Putting the mind on the object. Okay. Sam Jokpa means putting the mind on the object.
I'm not.
On the object of meditation. Say you're going to meditate on the image of a Buddha, which is supposed to be the best object to start with. You hear from your lama says, okay, now go and sit and I want you to meditate on a Buddha. When you sit down and put your mind on that Buddha, you have reached already the first level. That's like a white belt in karate. You know, you buy the costume, they give you one.
Michael, you mentioned two different things. You mentioned learning about an object, the proper object of meditation from your lama.
Yeah.
And then
this is the
putting
result.
Your mind on it.
This is the result.
So
what is the force that boots you up to the first level? Just getting the instructions from your lama. This is what you should meditate on. Then that boots you up to the first level.
So it's learning about and receiving directions to meditate.
What object to take?
So receiving an object from your lama to meditate on.
Yeah.
Getting
already
instructions about that.
That gets you up to the first. Then you go and sit down and you put your mind on the object. And I'll describe what it's like. He says, Nipala shaksam shaksam ne. You're just able to put your mind on the object now and then. You know, you sit there for 15 minutes and you know, okay, for that long you kept it. Then you were mostly wandering. Then again, a couple of seconds you're on the object, something like that. That's called putting your mind on the object. He says, at this point, you still don't have the ability to have any continuity in the meditation. There is no stream. It's just single points where you're able to put your mind on the object.
This is in this state.
Very obviously, like the sound of the words from your teacher and passed on through has some kind of effect. You can't just learn it from a book. So that's Semjokpa. Even if the book says the same thing that he says. All right.
What is Semjokpa?
Putting the mind on the object. Sem means mind, Jokpa means putting it on the object. Object is not mentioned. He says something interesting here. He says, by the way, when you reach this point, you'll think that you're worse than you were before. And he says, you will think that your mind is more wild than it was before you started meditating. And you know the answer to that. What is it? You just started to notice it. He makes a point here. He says, don't be discouraged. He says, you're just noticing what was going on all the time. So he says, don't think that you're getting worse. You're just starting to notice what your mind is like. What do you think comes next? They're just coming back with a vengeance because you've kept them down for a while. So you have this impression. It's quiet for a while, so it sounds louder when they come back. Okay. And that's the sort of impression you get while you're doing this point. He says, at these first two stages, Chingwa and Gopa are many, which is dullness and excitement. Those two diseases are frequent, and the fixation is infrequent. And he says the periods of distraction are longer than what?
Concentration.
The periods of fixation, okay. The periods on which your mind is off the object are longer than the periods on which your mind is on the object. So the gaps between the times when you're able to keep your mind on the object are longer time-wise than the periods when your mind is on the object. And that's the whole quality of these first two states. Say that the Buddha appears as a Dalai Lama in this world because you're more attracted to him right now in our present condition. Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that if you truly understood the benefits of concentrating on an object like that, then it couldn't be boring. I mean, how could you really truly grasp the benefits of it and be bored at the same time?
I guess not, but the fact is that we do, right? And it's probably because we don't grasp the benefits. So I'd say, that's why I said I thought you might want to call that state laziness, really. You know? Because its antidote would be seeing the good qualities of that Buddha. You see what I mean?
Well, lazy, you know, because somebody
it is a kind of,
talks about laziness as a form of being attracted to in the context of meditation or dharma, undesirable, unvirtue, being attracted to unvirtue. It's stated that way in some of the texts.
I haven't seen it.
It's laziness.
But I've seen Toa.
Which is kind of interesting because in a way that makes
sense. No, laziness is kind of not wanting to do it. Because those four antidotes are pretty clear.
But I think this is taking one step further and saying, why isn't it that you want to do it? It's because you're thinking about you want to have pancakes for breakfast, or you would like to rather think about something different, or you'd rather do something different.
I guess you could say that.
We don't understand. You think that the benefits of having pancakes are better than the benefits of concentrating?
Yeah, actually we do.
I do.
Then the Jokpa. Jopa means what?
Putting your mind.
Put your mind on the object. Lende means, you've seen it in the books, patch-like. This is a lemba. This is a patch. This is to patch something. Patch. Like a patch on a tire. More like that.
Putting your mind on a patch.
He says, when you get a hole in your clothes, you put a patch on it. And the thing you're patching is what? The clone.
You're connecting
an interruption. And by catching yourself and starting again, in a sense, you're patching up that hole.
your overall translation will be?
Patch like putting your mind on the object. Or, you know, that won't make it in a book, but...
Patch continuity or something?
Well, this word means putting your mind on the object. I didn't want to use fixation because we used it for that other thing. And this means patch in patches, patching...
Patching continuity?
So this is a lot like the correction of
like
taking
correction.
An action.
Well, here's what he says. The distinction that sets this apart from the two before is the length of the wandering of the mind. See, as you see here, it's really just gaps that you're filling in.
You're patching the stream, essentially.
Your listener is distracted.
Yeah, well, you're less... The length of the distracted period, the length of the gap is longer. It's shorter, sorry.
The length of the gap that you are patching is
shorter.
Plus you're patching.
Number two.
Plus you're patching, I don't know, yeah, you can say that. But I'd say when you're patching means to start up again. You can't go back in time and fill up that hole. Patching means you start it again.
But you're doing that in the other tables.
But it's so long, you don't patch a shoelace.
You don't put a band-aid on it.
Okay. He says at this point, you have gained a pretty powerful jemba, recollection. Remembering to come back to your object. Recall. You're losing the object completely. Maybe for shorter periods or longer periods, but you're losing the object completely. When you get to the fourth one, you're no longer losing the object completely, but now you've reached the third problem, which is...
Dullness
or agitation with the object still sitting there in front of your mind. So now you're no longer struggling to keep the object in your mind, you're struggling to keep the quality of your meditation up.
And is it strong dullness and strong agitation, or just...
Obvious, he says, heavy. Right? Obvious dullness and obvious agitation are going on at the fourth point. But what's brought you to the fourth point is very strong recall. Your ability to recall the object, bring it back into your mind, has now reached a very fine point. And he says, the Lama, remember these are lectures being given in 1921, the Lama mentioned that at this point your ability to recall the object is like a grown-up person. It's not an adult. It's what do you call it in English? Grown-up.
Mature.
It's full grown. It's full grown. Your ability to recall the object now is full grown.
Complete one, you can see.
Yeah, mature. He says, by the way, he uses both words as a, what do you call it? John, the president, is going today to a positive. Okay, anyway. It's where you put two words next to each other and they mean the same thing. You know? Jemba, recalling the object, is, and he uses that, he uses Dzogpa, complete, and he uses adult next to it. And it's a word that only means an adult person. It doesn't ever mean anything else. So he does mean full-blown and full-grown. Okay? All right, number five. To bring it under control. Jemba means to do it. The word Vinaya is also comes from this root. The monk's vows are called really... how to control yourself. To watch it. He says, at the fourth stage, the tendency is for people to bring their mind inside too forcefully.
At the fourth stage.
The tendency is for people to bring their mind inside too forcefully. And therefore, subtle dullness becomes a great danger.
What do you mean bring the mind in?
Your guess is as good as mine. I was afraid you asked me that. You guys really do this. It says, sem nung de dutak. Your withdrawing of the mind into yourself is too strong. Too introspective? Too focused inwards? Too focused inside is too much. With excessive strength, so that you get subtle dullness. Trying
subtle or subtle?
Subtle dullness.
Is it like trying too hard?
I think it's maybe something we have to find out. I would say normally that these words in Tibetan mean they can also describe what happens during sleep as you go to sleep. The mind is brought into the inside. Okay. So it's too excessive. It's like going in, it's like bringing it in so far that it gets dumb. It gets dull. Bringing the mind in away from the sense objects so with such strength that you lose your strength, you become dull.
Wouldn't sleep be a good analogy? Heading toward unconsciousness?
I think so, yeah, something like that. Sleep, these same words are used for what happens to your mind during sleep. So I'm just saying, maybe he's trying to say that. In fact, at higher levels of concentration, the act of sleeping becomes the act of meditation. Mm. And your sleep turns into concentration. And that's one of the benefits of shamatha.
Couldn't this be like hypnosis?
I don't think so. Or maybe in that you can become kind of dull. You know, I imagine. I've never been hypnotized.
What's jipa?
Which one?
Jipa.
Jipa means to do it. To control the mind. To bring it under control.
And then duwa means to tame.
Yeah, so to do the taming. In Tibetan, sometimes you have to have a verbalizer. In English, you don't say controlling sometimes, you say bring it under control. It's like that. It's the bring and bring it under control. He says, at this point, you need powerful... Will you tell me? What problem have we reached? The antidote to the third problem. And if you're a smart debater, you'll say no. And then they'll try to attack you and say, what do you mean, watchfulness is number three? And you say, oh, you mean number three in DA? Of course it is. Mm-hmm. So then in Tibetan you have to say, watchfulness, which is number three of the eighth, is the antidote for number three. I'm sorry, number five of the eighth. Mm-hmm. You see, you have to use that qualifier. There's lots of watchfulnesses.
So how is this really distinct than the other steps, since all the other steps
he's, are watchfulness? He's differentiating. I think it's... Don't forget you're on the object. So it's not the act of recalling the object. It's bringing your mind back to the object. Catching your mind wandering from the object.
Prior, it was catching your mind wandering from the object. Now it's catching your mind not being clear, not having intent.
Catching your mind on the object, but some problem of the quality of your meditation. The other one was just catching yourself not being on the object at all, bringing your mind back.
So maybe you have to be more aware because it's a subtler... catch. You know, it's not as easy to catch because it's a subtler type of problem.
Yeah.
These are all the corrections are functioning all along anyway. But I mean, to be aware enough to start to apply the patch means that you're...
That's true.
You're making the correction, right?
As well. That's true. Because he does say here, your watchfulness reaches a mature level, a strong level.
And then you're taking action to apply the patch.
Implying that it was there before also. That some kind of watchfulness was there before. We have this thing in the perfections when we debate... Madhyamika. There are six perfections. The Madhyamika Avatara has 10 chapters relating to the 10 perfections. And you know, you debate, oh, he didn't have morality before that, how did he ever get to that perfection? You say, yeah, he had it, but this is the stage at which it turns on. You know, so you can say that. That's all right. So he says that, and then he says, the difference between this and the previous two, okay?
Previous two meaning three.
Yeah. Is whether or not the dullness and agitation are... Yeah.
When you say the watchfulness is completely mature at this point, you mean...
He doesn't say mature in this case, he says powerful.
Oh. So it's not like you always catch it every time?
It doesn't seem to imply that, no. It just says powerful. We'll do one more and then we'll take a break.
What is the difference? I still
He said, what's,
see
the,
in the chart,
what's the difference between 5 and really 4 and 3? He says it's in the degree in which the dullness or the wandering is obvious or is gross, which implies that it's fairly subtle by this time.
So are you comparing, did you do the straight line to show the difference between 4 and 5?
No.
Or is it because you have both?
Both of them were straight lines because there were no gaps. There are no gaps. You did not lose the object, right? You don't lose the object anymore.
Subtle dullness. That's the only place it ever comes from?
It's the only place we could find it.
What does she want?
And they know I can search 30,000 pages in like 30 seconds now. That's very useful. Yeah, I don't think you'll find it anymore. So this
five.
Is where you get subtle agitation.
So number 5 is only dullness.
Yeah, I guess let's put agitation above. How's that? Here you've got both. You're the guinea pigs. You're the first class I do this with.
Well, it's good.
So does Shiwami?
Oh, I'm sorry. Good point. Shiwa means peace. P-E-A. Chepa means to make. Make it peaceful. Make it calm. Make the mind calm.
So what would you call it?
Making the mind calm. Calming the mind. But you see, it doesn't... It has a specific technical meaning. You see, it doesn't just mean, hey, you know, you're calm after that. They're looking for words to describe states that have no words. When they get in the Abhidhamma in the third chapter, when they try to describe subatomic particles, which they describe down to about 20... You know, and it's interesting because modern physicists have had the same problem. They call them both. What do they call them?
Quarks.
They just make up silly words because there's no word to describe that. You know?
Some of them are forbidding its weight.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, what is it? It's not really becoming calm. You've been calm all along, but it's called calming the mind.
Does this include the
antidote? We're going to talk about that. He says at this point you need extremely powerful what? Washing, shishin. The antidote here is still powerful shishin. It was for the last one, too.
But what's the difference?
You tell me. The antidotes were the same.
Watchfulness?
One's up,
powerful one's watchfulness. The problem here is subtle
agitation.
The problem here was subtle
dullness. So when you want to bring...
So what do you think distinguishes this level from that one? You can no longer have much trouble of subtle dullness. And that's how he describes it. And by the time you get to number 6, there's not a big danger. What does that imply?
There's some danger
of getting subtle dullness.
So how does this relate to your pendulum?
I guess it's not going to swing back very likely. Pendulum's going like this. It started out like that, you know, and now it's like...
But I would think every time you have subtle dullness, you overcorrect to subtle agitation, right? I mean, that would be my way...
Anytime you try to correct subtle dullness?
In step 5, every time you get subtle dullness once.
Yeah.
You correct it.
Oh,
once.
I think so, yeah. I don't think you do this one night on March 10th and then on March 12th you still have...
So you're still going back and forth between subtle dullness.
By the way, he says... By the way, what do you think kicks you up to 5 and 6? What do you think is it that allows you to get to number 5 and 6? No, but which one of the antidotes is very active?
Watchfulness.
So he says watchfulness is the thing that allows you to move up to 5 and 6. And at this point, he says, you can call your watchfulness... There you go, Mr. Stonewall.
Taking action.
Complete. At this point, you can call your watchfulness complete.
Meaning at the 6th.
Full grown, full blown. At 6. Yeah. Okay, take a break.
Can you just go over...
Did you want to heat up the tea?
Yeah, I don't have...
Fran, can you do that? Can you do that?
There's a lighter, right?
Like, yeah, but I...
you on the right, there's a little by the sink. On the left side of the sink, oh, a lighter.
You have to turn on the gas and then stick the flame in there, and it doesn't work right. Dullness and agitation to occur. But you still have to use effort towards eliminating subtle dullness and subtle agitation completely. And what I mean is basically, at this point it's difficult for plain old dullness and agitation to occur, but you still got to, at this point you're still trying to make some active effort to eliminate them completely. He says, what distinguishes this one, or I should say no, from the ones before it, are that whether or not you have to, the word in Tibetan is a little tricky, whether or not you have to have much fear that subtle forms of dullness are going to occur or not, whether or not you have to watch very, very carefully anymore. Nyendokcher means whether or not you have to. Brief descriptions of all nine. And the names.
Are you told us disregard the name?
Yeah, you can put that. And see what happens.
As long as you spell that right, it's okay.
Okay, he says, what does Tsechik mean? Tsechik is the definition of Tingen Zen, Samadhi. What is that? Tsechik is
concentration.
Single-pointed mind. One-pointedness. Single-mindedness. I like the word single-mindedness. It's really what it is. So Tsechik means one point. Tsechiktu means one-pointedly. Chepa means bring the mind to one-pointedness. Reaching one-pointedness, how's that? He says at this point, at the beginning of your meditation, as your meditation period starts, you make a slight effort to bring your mind to the object. Okay. And then during the whole meditation session, what? There's no shingwa or gapa. You don't get dullness or agitation. But you have to apply some effort before you start. Before you start, you have to check your mind, clear your mind, balance it, and then it just cruises for the whole meditation. He says, for example, you can compare these last few stages, he doesn't say which ones, to having an enemy who is very powerful, then on to having an enemy who has gotten weaker, on to having an enemy who is totally, what do you call it?
The enemy.
Impotent. Defanged. Defanged is good, yeah. He says, in other words, the enemy starts out very serious enemy. He's got some guns. And then later on, you've taken most of his guns away, and at the end, he's just standing there, defenseless.
So would you say it's effortless after you place it on the object?
Well, that's going to come later because he said you need... Yeah, after.
After the effort.
You need some effort to kick off.
So after the initial effort, no effort.
Yeah. So you can imagine what the ninth one is going to be, right?
No effort.
By the way, he says, from the eighth level on up, you don't need to turn on your station anymore. You don't need to use actively watchfulness anymore.
What's the difference?
Chepa means to do it, and Jopa means to set the mind on the object. But again, you really should know the characteristics of each level and not be too concerned about the names. I can imagine someone getting a list of the names, you know, and struggling to reach peace, you know, and then trying after that to be calm. First, in the Dengyur, which is the Indian commentaries, without any explanation of what they are, or, you know, like those five conditions that for the place, they were Loden Kandu Drupe Yu, Lepa Nyedang Nesangwa, Lepa Nyedang Nesangwa, Sasang. 사상화라 로사와 대목에서 나왔습니다. 내한절대와 요체댐. It doesn't give any clue to what it is. Lepa Nyepa means easy to find. What it doesn't say. Nesangwa means good place. Sasangwa means good area. Droksangwa means good friends. And everything you need. Now, what do those mean, actually?
Sounds like a great partner.
That's going to say the
same. Actually, yeah. You need just bug. Right? easy to find means comfortable place, you have food and clothing. That one's not too bad. Good place means no wild animals or other fearful things that endanger you. Safe place instead of meditation. Some people struggle to translate to nyamba. Nyamba means even. Remember in the posture, your shoulders were nyamba. When we discuss the posture meditation. So nyamba does mean even. People struggle to give it some meaning. I don't know if there's any meaning to it. It just means deep meditation. Okay. You can say even meditation if you want. Okay. What are the qualities of this? You tell me.
So you would say place mind in deep meditation?
I would say place mind in deep meditation. You can say equilibrium, stability or something. You know, people struggle to get some meaning in there, but it's artificial. You don't have to struggle. It's not what it means. When you learn Tibetan very well, you realize that there are Sanskrit prefixes and suffixes. You know, when I say consciousness in English, and you're a Tibetan translator who doesn't know English very well, you'll say coming together knowingness, knowing now, a noun of coming together knowing. And most of the translations are like that. They just don't know that consciousness is a single word meaning awareness. So a lot of times you get a very bad translation because they don't know that that whole unit is one word and it doesn't have to be. You don't have to struggle to give each syllable a meaning. It's not meant that way. Even in English, all the Latin prefixes and suffixes they don't have their separate meanings anymore. Consciousness doesn't mean a together knowingness anymore. It just means to be aware. So you have to learn it well. Nyamba Dzogpa is what? You tell me.
The mind is always in deep meditation.
Yeah, come on.
Easy to get there and not having to defend it?
Define it by the last one.
Effortless.
Effortless entering into deep meditation. Wow.
Entering the body.
There, yeah. And he says the ninth one is accomplished through Dibha. Dibha means doing it over and over and over and over.
Doing what? The prior steps.
Practicing your morning meditation. Practicing. Or an evening if it's Sunday.
How common is it for somebody to be able to do this?
They say that if you try hard, you can do it in 6 months.
Can you do it?
Can you do it?
An hour a day,
you mean? We're not allowed to say.
God, that's going to be...
If you never had, you couldn't see emptiness directly.
If you what?
If you had never done it, you could never see emptiness directly.
So you have to have this to see.
If you saw emptiness directly...
Catch 22. Excuse me? Sounds like catch 22.
No, not at all. This comes way before.
The ninth stage in relation to
Shinshin. He doesn't say anything. What he does say is that this is... he says this sense which is focused on emptiness. And shamatha and vipassana always come... they don't always come together, but when the pair of those is the goal of meditation. Does shamatha investigate the nature of the object? No. But so it must be joined with vipassana, which is the wisdom which investigates the object. So it's almost like you've got the vise and the screwdriver or something. Okay. Shamatha is holding the object so that vipassana, which is the highest state of wisdom, can analyze it. So there are teachings on. I can take you through 8 steps of objects. We did them in our debating the other day. But the basic distinction, I didn't want to bring it up, but since you brought it up, the distinction between shamatha and vipassana which are very famous words and misused a lot. They are both focused on the nature of objects and on all objects. They both have clarity and fixation and clarity with intensity. Okay? So the nature of how they concentrate is the same. And the objects towards which they focus is the same. So what distinguishes them?
The object?
No, the objects are the same. So what do you think distinguishes them? This is a point which is missed by a lot of people.
The intensity?
No, the intensity is totally the same.
Can you say that again, please?
The difference between these very famous two words, which are thrown around very lightly, shamatha and vipassana.
Can you spell that second word?
I was afraid you asked me that.
Is it the same as vipassana meditation?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
I want to look it up for you. Let me look it up, okay? Because I don't want to misspell it. Vipassana is the Pali. In a sense, what I believe is the vipassana. But I want to check.
That's what people do when they go and do this breath meditation for 10 days.
Yeah, but...
That's point 9 is vipassana.
No, we're just comparing... Somebody asked how to compare point 9 to these two very high states of wisdom and meditation.
Point 9 is
which are very famous. I mean, if you read the Donald books and all that stuff, they mention them all the time, and rarely very clearly. Shamatha is focused towards the totality of objects and their nature. Vipassana is focused towards the totality of objects and their nature. Shamatha, the totality of objects and their nature, what we call jitta and jinyepa. You weren't supposed to get into this. Okay, you want to? They're both focused on the real nature of existence at their highest level. They both have perfect fixation. They both have perfect clarity. They both have clarity with
intensity.
So what makes them different?
One is ultimate reality.
No, both ultimate reality.
What about conventional?
Both conventional.
I would guess that...
The two. And then there's a long... there's 8 different... stages you have to discuss. You don't have time tonight. They're called Chepa, Michepa, Mubhuta, and then the fourth one is... Well, these are Kyabeyu. And then you have Kebe, Chepa Namjang, Kebe Mipa, and Nyamon Namjang. So you can study it.
Yeah. Are you going to talk about the... changes that occur in the bodies and feelings and sensations and all that associated with this?
He doesn't talk much about it. Your body, those are sense sensations. Those are gross distractions.
Well, purification, the negative energies and things like that.
Is
The first Dalai Lama mentions in his commentary on the Abhidhamma Kosha in the section on meditation, four stages of bliss. It's called... Dewa Chembo, and it's found in much higher teachings also. So he does talk about that. Those are related to Xinjiang, to agility. Agility means, that was the fourth antidote to the first problem. That does mean some kind of bliss you get from meditating. Mental and physical.
And your body's plants.
You feel very light, and you feel very supple. But if you really want to know, there's 9 levels of causal meditation.
What meditation?
Causal meditation. In a division called Shiraki Namatsu, which you go up through different levels. And basically what it is it's where each time you get to a higher level, each time you get to a level, the level above you, it's grass is greener concept. The level above you looks a little more subtle. So you lose your desire to stay at this level and you go up to a higher level of concentration. As you go through those levels, you actually abandon any desire for any kind of sensation. And the way in which you abandon them is, this is not the subject, okay? First you abandon mental unhappiness. Then you abandon physical pain. And then you abandon mental happiness. And then you abandon physical happiness. So what are you left with? There are five feelings, five sensations you can have. What are they? Mental and physical pain, mental happiness and mental unhappiness, physical pain and physical pleasure. And what's the one that you have left? You're capable of having five sensations.
Worms.
One is going on, one of them is going on all the time.
Discrimination.
No.
Perception.
No.
Worms.
What's that?
Awareness.
No. What's the fifth sensation you can have? If you're not feeling good and you're not feeling bad, what are you feeling? This is the highest you can get in the desire mode. Okay. There are higher states than that. But this is the basic state of mind you need to be in. That state of mind and those states of mind are the same. They are shamatha.
All of those are shamatha. Yeah. All those are the ones.
Yeah. But that method, which is to try to get more and more blissed and to try to get more and more subtle state of mind, runs out. And what you reach is this very, very high state of mind where you're just totally feeling neutral. And then you can't go on beyond that. To go beyond that, you have to do what?
See emptiness directly.
See emptiness directly. So it's a big danger. You can get up higher than that, go another four levels, and get stuck.
And this is where you're going to
the because the capacity to feel is samsara.
And so you mean if you go into a formless realm at that point, rebirth in a formless realm?
Yeah, you would be born in a form of it. The capacity to have the sensation of neutral feeling is suffering.
Yeah. It's said in this book I read that it's equanimity and awareness. What do they mean by awareness? Is it awareness and equanimity?
That I there could be 10 different contexts for that. You have to show me the context.
So Michael, we're talking about this.
Excuse me?
I think they were talking about this.
You're probably talking about, no, it's probably about the, it sounds like the immeasurables, right?
So Michael, is there ever a level that you attain where the power of concentration or power of focus doesn't degenerate when you stop meditating? You know,
the Buddha. There's this famous quotation that the Buddha is in deep meditation. Oop, quiz, you don't want that. Even when he's eating, even when he's walking, even when he's talking, even when he's...
So let's say you get to the ninth level of this shamatha meditation. If you stop meditating, you lose it?
I think when you come out.
Yeah, like you stop meditating.
Break your meditation.
You've gotten this level and you stop meditating for a couple of weeks, a couple of months. Right?
This just says that you...
This is the end of Class 7.